The gospel reading is from Mark chapter 12, verses 38 through 44. As he taught, he said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for the sake of appearance say long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation." He sat down opposite the treasury and watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which are worth a penny. Then he called his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury. For all of them have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on." The word of the Lord.
It seems almost every time that Jesus shows up at the temple, as he did in the gospel today, things get pretty uncomfortable. It's always a confrontation going on there. And that's indeed the case here. And it's hard to know what to make of it, because on the one hand here, we see self-centeredness. We see greed. We see even exploitation going on. And on the other hand, we see freedom. We see generosity. We see love and faith even being expressed. Something's haunted me as I was looking at this story to prepare for preaching. This phrase that Jesus says, the scribes and the leaders gave out of their abundance, but this woman, this widow, she gave out of her poverty, she gave everything. How do we wrap our brains around that? Out of poverty, she was able to give. Sometimes maybe a story, another story, helps us get our heads wrapped around that a little bit. What I was thinking of was the Shakespeare's story, King Lear. It was brought to my mind because my niece is going to have a birthday coming up pretty soon, and her uncle always is fishing for things to give her, and she mentioned a book that I might buy her on Shakespeare, and I got it, and it had all these summaries of his plays. But King Lear is a play that could be right out of Game of Thrones, really, a chapter right out of that. There's intrigue and murder and death and all this and that. King Lear is aging. Heavy is the crown, and he doesn't want to wear it anymore. So he comes up with a brilliant plan. He has three daughters. He decides he will divide his kingdom among them and his money with them, and then they can have the hassles of ruling, and he can just come and stay with them and live his days, his retirement out that way. Well, he gathers his daughters together and tells them of this plan, and he says, "Whoever loves me most, I'll give the biggest share." And he looks at his first daughter and says, "How much do you love me?" Well, she's no dummy, and she starts to flatter him. She starts to manipulate him. She just piles it on thick and says, "Oh, I love you more than the flowers love the sunshine. I love you more than the deserts love the rain that's coming down." And her father is impressed by all this empty flattery, this manipulation. And he gives her the lion's share of his property right then and there. He looks at his second daughter and says, "Well, how much do you love me?" Well, she saw what just happened, and she's no fool. So she starts buttering him up right away and laying it on thick. And he's very impressed. And he gives her a big chunk of his money and his kingdom. And he looks at his third daughter and says, "How much do you love me?" And she remains silent. She can't say what her sister said. The trouble was, she actually truly loved him. She loved him as her father. And that kind of love cannot be used to manipulate somebody to get them to give you stuff. So she can't do what her sister said, and she remains silent. And her father thinks it is a lack of love, and he's furious, and he says, "All right, what I was going to give to you, I'll divide to my other two daughters." And so they go off and live their life, and the first time he shows up at his first daughter's house, to stage. She says, oh, welcome, welcome, Daddy. And he says, well, great, but I've got 100 of my favorite knights here. I've got an entourage. They get to stay with me too. And she goes, no, 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 no. I'll put you up, but I'm not paying for those bums. Well, he's furious. It was his money in the first place, and she won't spend it on his friends. So he goes to the second daughter and gets the same treatment. Dad, you're welcome, but I'm not going to pay for those bums. And he goes out, furious, lost. Of course, these two daughters, when they're that selfish, that self-centered, they're easily manipulated by other people who are even more self-centered. They get in disastrous entanglement with men who use them and turn them against each other. The one sister poisons the other, then she commits suicide. Together they've conspired for the death of the third daughter. They all are dead, and at the end, Lear realizes what he has set in motion by this plan of his. The two daughters who had everything, out of their riches, what were they able to give to their father? Nothing, because it was all about them. And Lear, way too late, found out that the one who seemed to have the least love, who was just poverty, had what he really wanted, what he really needed, and he missed it because he couldn't get his mind wrapped around this. If we think that we're all sufficient upon ourselves and everything depends on ourselves, which we do most of the time, guess what? Then you can only love things. Everything becomes a mean to the end, and the end is preserving yourself, keeping yourself happy, keeping yourself secure. It might extend to your family, but it all gets pretty quickly turned in on yourself, and so therefore even people can become things that we just use for our happiness, for our gain, for our pride, whatever it is. But if somehow we're able to let go of that fact and realize the deeper reality that everything we have is a gift from God, all of a sudden we are freed to love. When it doesn't depend on us, we stop using things and we stop using people, and we're actually able to love. When Jesus came to the temple had been established as a wonderful, wonderful gift from God. The temple, the intention of it, the purpose, was to be the meeting place between heaven and earth, between God and humans. Of course, God is present everywhere in all times and all places, but God said, just so you don't miss the point, to his people Israel, he said, I will appear at this temple that you build for me, and you know that when you come there to worship, I will be present. It was to be the place where people could come and offer their prayers, offer their sacrifices, and then they would eat together in joy, having received forgiveness and blessing from God, and be able to share that. But because we think it's all up to us, we can twist anything. And the scribes who were supposed to be in charge of this wonderful work of the temple were even able to turn that up and make that about themselves. Jesus sat there and watched these guys. They were beautifully dressed in expensive clothes. People were bowing to them on the street because they were such great religious authorities. People would invite them out. They wanted to have them over to their house. They were like rock stars. And Jesus even saw that they would come there to the temple, to the place where they gave their offerings, and they give huge offerings in public. And Jesus says they are only giving out of their abundance. Even their giving is just to impress other people. And Jesus knew the only reason they were able to give is because they were exploiting poor people. They were exploiting the temple just for their own self-gain. In contrast to all that was going on, that was being noticed, here comes in this one poor woman. She sees what's going on in the temple. She knows the corruption there. She could be sitting there thinking, why am I even wasting my money? Because it's just going to be misused. But there's something else that drives her. And she comes quietly. She knows no one's going to even notice her. Nobody's going to praise her for what she gives. And she gives her simple little offering. But who notices? Jesus does. Jesus points her out right away. He says, the rest gave out of their abundance, and they gave next to nothing. She, out of her poverty, was able to give everything. When we are knocked about by life, knocked off our high horse, knocked off our pedestal, and come to realize that the things we have and our accomplishments are not the be-all and end-all, it's great to accomplish things. It's great, don't get me wrong. But if we rely on that as the be-all and end-all of our existence, then we lose. It's when people like this poor woman realize she couldn't depend on all her money and all her wealth and all her talent because none of those were available to her. So she had to trust to something deeper, and that is God's love and God's blessing. And that freed her up to move beyond focusing on herself to a trust, and she was free to share, free to let go, free to do what all those scribes and Pharisees were absolutely unable to do. This is so counter to our normal way of thinking that we're kind of shocked when we see it in the world. But when the people who are able to practice this are the ones who are actually able to transform the world. Mother Teresa knew this reality. She was called to minister to the poorest of the poor in India. She didn't build fancy hospitals. She didn't build beautiful buildings. She built simple cinder block buildings where she could take the poorest of the poor who were left on the streets of India literally to die and bring them into a place of safety where they could get clean water, where they could get some care and love as they spent their last days on this earth. Out of her poverty, she was able to give exactly what they needed. Nelson Mandela transformed his country. You realize he sat in prison for a couple decades. What would be more impotent than that? What would be a place where it would be harder to affect social change? And yet his witness, his writings, his teachings from prison were able to transform his racist country and set people free. And when he was finally released, it wasn't with just look at me, look at how wonderful I am. He was able to offer to even his enemies a process of forgiveness and reconciliation. Out of what seemed to be poverty, he was able to give the most, transform his country. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the great Lutheran pastor, theologian, and martyr, he knew this too. He was a theological rock star, and before World War II in Germany, he saw what was coming. He saw what the Nazis were doing in the future, that he was able to come to America before World War II, and he was just lionized here. People thought he was just, like I said, a superstar. He could have had a job at one of the most prestigious American colleges or seminaries. He could have spent the war in safety. Writing, teaching had an amazing impact. But he said, no, that is not my place. That's the place of riches. He says, I must go back to my country, to my people, to my church. During the Second World War, he was part of a plot to assassinate Hitler. The plot failed. Failure, poverty, couldn't even pull that off. And so he's thrown into the Nazi death camps and he died. But out of his poverty, his witness spoke all the more. You see it time and time again, Martin Luther King Jr., he did it. But it's not just the big people in the world. It is the dynamic that allows us to live in this world too. Any significant relationship has to be based on this. Whether it's a deep friendship, whether it's your marriage. If you come to those relationships thinking it's all about me, and many of us do, guess what? They're going to fail. They're going to fail big time. But if you come into your relationships with the poverty that is love, willing to give more than you get, those relationships are deepest and most meaningful. If we get this attitude, we'll be able to relate differently to the world. You know, we look at poverty, physical poverty, but other kinds of poverty. We look at people who are disabled, people who are unfortunate, and we think, oh, we need to give to them. They have nothing to give to us. But if you really spend time with them, like just eating at the banquet, sitting with whoever is at that table, you realize you get more out of it than you ever brought to it. This dynamic is so clear at the time of death. What would seem to be more impoverished than are dying, when we can't even cling to our own life, we're not in control of even that anymore, it scares most of us. We don't want to be in contact with that. One of the most recent deathbeds I attended, it was amazing. I came there with communion. I came there with my best and most comforting Bible verses. I came there with my best and most comforting prayers, and I was able to offer all of that, and it was graciously and wonderfully received. But before I left, I knew this was the last time I'd see this gentleman. He stopped me and put his hand on my shoulder and blessed me before I left. Out of his seeming poverty, once his life was all out of the way, once he could only trust in where he was going and the love that was going to receive him, he had riches to give me beyond anything else. Well, at this point, I'm supposed to be wrapping this up with some bringing it home conclusion to you, and I don't have that. Maybe that's, again, giving out of my riches. Maybe I can conclude simply out of poverty, not being able to convince you, but simply being able to do as Jesus did, to point. Jesus just pointed out to the one place in his life where he saw freedom, where he saw life, where he saw trust and faith and love pouring out into the world. And he says, there it is. There it is. Trust it. Maybe we can all trust that and live that. Amen.